You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Klay Thompson's Achilles injury. You know, we talked about this yesterday when we started the show. I didn't care about the draft. I just kept thinking about Klay Thompson, and I was really looking forward to seeing what this team could do. The fact that you would have Steph, Klay, you'd have Draymond, James Wiseman in there, Wiggins in there as well, the mastery of Steve Kerr. You know, the West is great. It'll be a lot of fun, competitive, but I just look forward to seeing that style of basketball, and we're not going to see it. At least not in its original art form there. It's a blow to NBA fans who wanted to see what the Warriors would look like this year. And last year was a washout because of injuries. And the last time we saw the real Warriors, you have to go back to the finals against Toronto. That team featured Steph and Kevin Durant and Klay. And I thought it was going to be really interesting to see them go back to the duo instead of the triumvirate. And remember, Golden State won a title and set the single-season win record before KD got there. And they seemed to be making the kind of moves that would help Curry and Thompson get back to that level. Hopefully, Klay will fully recover. Underrated superstar, and that's based off a low-key personality. Great two-way player, one of the great shooters of all time, and the Warriors will certainly miss him this year. They're not tanking this year. Too much talent to tank. You can't have a healthy Steph Curry and say, hey, we're going to tank this year. I know that people brought that up yesterday. I don't see that happening. James Wiseman will contribute. Draymond Green is still a good player. You know, they'll be competitive, but they're not going to be one of the teams to beat in the West this year. And I started to canvas the West here. I don't know what's happening with the Rockets. You know, the Clippers, you know, they hopefully have learned from what happened in the bubble. The Lakers are going to be the team to beat. Portland, healthy, a Portland team that's healthy, will be dangerous. Phoenix is going to be dangerous. I think you might have more teams that are dangerous in the West than teams that can win the West. Denver, to me, will border on being the team to beat in the West, but they're going to be a dangerous team again. But you have to look at that regular season and just attrition, where you're just trying to keep pace. And what is your seeding going to be when you get to the playoffs? And then you start to look at the East. I mean, the East is going to be really competitive as well. We have Miami. We know what Miami is. I don't know if they make any moves. Free agency starts today. Boston Celtics are going to lose Gordon Hayward. And when I saw the headline, Gordon Hayward opts out of $34 million with the Celtics. And I thought, okay, he must know something, because $34 million, Gordon Hayward, I was really surprised at that, because, and you know, maybe he's going to the Hawks, maybe he's going to the Knicks, maybe he wants to sort of reestablish himself as the best player on his team. Now, that's not going to happen with the Hawks. It might happen with the Knicks, but you're making $34 million, and you decided, okay, I don't want $34 million. I think he's got something that's going to be a little bit more longer term, maybe not as much money up front. You know, he's 17 points a game. Came back from the devastating injury, and he's a good player. He's not a great player. He's a good player. He's not a franchise player, and he must know the Knicks are willing to give him a, you know, 4 or 5 year deal for X number of dollars. Maybe Boston wasn't going to be willing to give that to him, and he started to look around and go, you know what? They're building around Kemba and Jaylen Brown, and of course Jason Tatum, and maybe I don't fit into the picture here. Celtics have always talked about a trade. They always talk about trades. They don't always pull off a trade. And I saw a report where the Celtics were saying that they looked at James Harden, but then they were scared off by a Western Conference source that that's not the best move for the Celtics. So there's some bad feelings about bringing in somebody like James Harden. James Harden with the Celtics? I don't get it, but... what's going on with the 76ers? I love what they did with their roster. I don't know if they're preparing their roster to make a trade. The feeling I got was you're going to be able to bring in some pieces, and then you're going to be able to make a move. Or they're bringing in these pieces to make a move. I'm not quite sure, but what Daryl Morey has already done, he earned Executive of the Year with getting rid of contracts, bringing in some shooters here. Brought in Doc Rivers as well. So Philadelphia is going to ride it right now with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. Toronto, if they re-sign Fred VanVleet, they're going to be there as well. So you're going to have some teams, obviously, with Milwaukee. Is Milwaukee going to do anything more? They lost Bogdanovich. Are they going to try to supplement that with somebody else? There's a whole lot of movement going on with the NBA, and it's great to see. It's fun. All right, McLovin, you got a poll question for me today.
Do you think Steph Curry will ever win another NBA title? Are they going to be able to put this together?
I'd have to know how Klay Thompson is after Achilles, because it's one thing to come back from knee surgery. Achilles, that's tricky. And he's going to be moving. He's going to be moving in 6 months where he's able to, you know, do something with that just to get back into some kind of basketball mode there. He's going to be out for 2 years. And then to try to come back, I mean, I was wondering about this. Klay Thompson averaged 20 points in each of his last five seasons. Can he get back to just that? Only one player since 1976 averaged 20 points after missing two seasons in a row. That was Michael Jordan. But Jordan was coming out of retirement. He was not coming back from an injury. Klay's coming back from an injury. I thought Bernard King may have missed a year and a half or so and then came back and averaged like 25 a game. But Klay to come back and average 20 and coming back from Achilles and missing 2 years, I would say Steph Curry is probably not going to win another championship. Because Draymond Green, his value is going to be quickly evaporating here in the next 2 years. I don't know how great James Wiseman's going to be. I don't know if Wiggins is there for the long haul. But I would say odds are right now, probably not. Yeah, Paul.
Dan, you're absolutely right about Bernard King. In the 84-85 season with the Knicks, Bernard King, for those who don't remember him, he averaged 33 points a game, leading the NBA. Then they drafted Patrick Ewing. You know, the next season when Bernard King got hurt, the 85-86 season, he didn't play at all for the knee injury. He played four games due to the knee injury the following season. So he missed 2 years of NBA basketball. And they got Patrick Ewing during his injury. He went on average when he came back 17, 21, 22, and then 28 points per game. That's a guy who came back from injury to kind of reclaim himself.
McLovin, what kind of poll question?
Okay, one more Steph Curry point, and I have to credit Shannon Sharp on Twitter with this. He said the Warriors should trade Steph to the Lakers right now. Imagine if something like that happened. Would he ever title chase and join a LeBron or anything like that?
Wait.
I think he was being maybe a little bit of joking. But he put up a picture of Steph, LeBron, and AD.
But wait, but why do we say these things when we don't think about the team that's trading somebody to the Lakers?
Well, the Warriors would be rebuilding, would be the theory, that they'd have to get a bunch of assets, and now it's time to rebuild.
Okay.
I don't think the Lakers is the best target for that, but at some point, do the Warriors tear it down and start over?
I can't imagine those Golden State fans who spent that money and the owners who spent that money on that arena, and you show up and you go, hey, come on out. We're going to watch Draymond Green and James Wiseman.
Don't forget Kelly Oubre Jr.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They got Kelly Oubre in the juniors. I guess he's serviceable for that team. He's one of those guys that strikes me as a 17-point guy on a bad team. And maybe he's a guy who'll be able to contribute to them, but yeah, a little bit. Expectations should be tempered a little bit with Kelly Oubre Jr. with Golden State. Yes, McLean.
Are you tempted at all to still pick Golden State as a contender, or is it just impossible?
I don't know. This is also the aspect of the mental part of this that you just lost Klay Thompson. And you got to factor that in as well, that this is just start the season and you go without him. I think there'll be dangerous. How about that? I think they'll be one of those. They might be a tough out in the first round kind of thing. Maybe. But I think it's pretty devastating. It is devastating that Steph was going to have Klay Thompson. They were comfortable together. They learned to get, you know, to incorporate Kevin Durant. But Draymond, Klay, and Steph, I was surprised that people were sort of dismissing them as one of the favorites. And I went, no, this is before Klay got hurt. Because you're going to have James Wiseman as well. Wiggins is a serviceable player as well. You're going to have a little bit of depth there. But, man, pretty tough. Pretty tough. And you've had the most consecutive seasons averaging three or more threes per game and shooting 45% all time. Steph has done it seven consecutive years. Klay's done it five consecutive years. No other player in NBA history has had two consecutive years of at least three threes made in a game and shooting 45% from the floor. You're really losing your style of play. And I don't know how you recreate that style of play. That's the big loss for me with Golden State is, who are they now? With Clay and Steph, I knew who they were. Now, I'm not quite sure. And they won't know either, I'm going to guess. What else do you have, McLovin?
Okay, NFL. What are we talking about Monday morning? And here's an exercise. Right. If the Vegas odds prove to be true and the favorites win, which game are we talking about first Monday morning? Browns beat the Eagles to improve to 7-3. Saints win with Jameis. Patriots beat the Texans to improve to 5-5. The Vikings beat the Cowboys to improve to 5-5. Chiefs beat the Raiders? Is that even a thing? And also, the Dolphins could win their fourth in a row.
No, if the Raiders beat the Chiefs.
Right, I'm only going with the favorites.
Oh, okay.
No upsets. Like, who's the team that is focal point on Monday? Is it the Patriots, maybe?
I'm going to guess it'll be the Browns because all these shows love to go with the Browns and the Eagles. So you have this a perfect combo platter. Hey, we can talk about Carson Wentz not being any good, and we can talk about the Browns. Are they legitimate contenders? Absolutely.
Over Jameis, though? That actually could be it, too.
Or it depends on how well he plays. But we don't even know if Jameis is starting. I haven't seen any official designation there.
I haven't either. Is it really up in the air?
It was yesterday. I don't know why there's a great mystery there, but I don't know if Jameis is strong enough to be the headline of the NFL. You can't go wrong with Baker Mayfield and Carson Wentz. These shows love that topic. Both of those topics. Yeah, McClellan.
They like Cam Newton, too. Cam improving to 5-5 in the Patriots.
Yeah. I mean, you're beating the Texans, right? Is that who they're playing? That doesn't count.
Tua? The Tua train?
I don't know. Probably not. Yeah, I'd say the Browns and the Eagles. What else do you have?
Okay. The Seahawks improved to 7-3, take the lead in the NFC West. Who's winning that division? The Seahawks at 7-3, the Rams at 6-3, or the Cardinals at 6-4. The only reason I would say the Rams, because they have Jalen Ramsey and Aaron Donald have been on fire. Is there any chance the Rams are the best team out of that division?
You know, we got Ross Tucker coming up. I'll ask him about that if we handicap this. At least I saw the sort of the remnants of what Seattle used to be, where they ran the football and they played pretty good defense. Because the defense just wasn't bad last night. They were less bad last night. Carlos Dunlap, who they got from the Bengals, came over, had the big sack at the end of the game. But it wasn't one of those, boy, the Seahawks won comfortably. Cardinals are dangerous, man. They're going to be, it feels like, in every game here. And the Rams, it comes down to Jared Goff. If Jared Goff plays at a high level, then I think the Rams are the team to beat in that division. Because they got defense there. They run the football. You got some weapons, but it comes down to how consistent your quarterback is. And you saw with the Seahawks last night, I think Russell Wilson got caught up in the MVP hype. I think he was all aboard the MVP hype train. And if you looked at the first 6 weeks, maybe 8 weeks, it was kind of easy for him. And now all of a sudden, those defenses were waiting for him. He was throwing red zone interceptions. He doesn't throw interceptions. He was throwing red zone interceptions. And Seattle might get back to running the football. And maybe if you can put some pressure on the quarterback, maybe Seattle's going to be able to put up a decent defense here. But it was fun last night. It wasn't a great game. Kyler looked good, not great. Got banged up a little bit there. But I wasn't surprised with the outcome. Yeah, Paulie.
I don't know if you heard, but the Seahawks have this new wide receiver named DK Metcalf.
Oh, I didn't see him featured
they
at all last night.
They did not really pay attention to him much last night.
Yeah, I didn't see that. It was like every 4 or 5 minutes, no matter what was happening. And there's DK Metcalf on the sideline. Hey, we haven't checked in with DK Metcalf.
He's got an extra ab.
He didn't do anything. He got a touchdown. He didn't do anything.
That's because they robbed him. He's on my fantasy team, and I went on a Twitter rant on the...
With the penalty when he had
Does anyone know what holding is? Can I just say that announcers, every time they're like, it's a holding, and then Troy Aikman's like, well, I didn't see much there. Every time, 50 times a game.
I've kind of given up on trying to figure out holding. I've given up on... I'm allowed to put one arm around you as a defensive back. That if I'm covering you, I can put my left arm around you as if I'm ready to go square dancing with you, and then I can put my right arm out there to try to deflect the ball away. I guess you're allowed to do it. I don't understand it. That seems like that would be holding, because I'm holding on to you. Yes, Paul.
I've got a beef, as long as we're airing some grievances, if you don't mind. I'm a Tyler Lockett guy. I loved him since he was in college. He went from a great return man to a great NFL wide receiver, and now he's getting passed by in coverage by DK Metcalf. The best wide receiver on their team is Lockett, production-wise. He's on pace for 110 catches, 1,200 yards, and 13 touchdowns. Last night, he got targeted 9 times. He had 9 catches.
Yeah.
9 times.
All right. But he might benefit from DK Metcalf.
No, he's getting Buda Bakered by DK Metcalf.
Well, he might have all these receptions or more because of DK Metcalf. It's DK Metcalf's going to get more attention. What would you rather have, the attention or the numbers?
He's getting the numbers.
Well, even when DK wasn't there, he wasn't getting that much attention. He's a wonderful player, but
he is sucking up all the coverage, and Tyler Lockett is fantastic.
Yes, he.
To be fair, though, Tyler Lockett has had, 7 years to become an elite? It's nice that he finally is, but he's had more than enough time to figure it out.
He's,
not a me first guy.
DK Metcalf is a phenomenon. Like, he's a freak out there. There's something about him. There's a lot of Tyler Locketts out there as far as the physicality. He's very talented. And I loved him at Kansas State as a kick returner. I came in on a Monday and told you how great this guy was.
You've always been a Tyler Lockett guy. I'll back you up.
I came in and I go, this guy's incredible. Yes, Seton.
ESPN did a cover story on DK Metcalf. And he was at 5 years old. Five. He was benching 50 pounds and squatting 100 pounds. At 5 years old. He was benching 50 pounds. He could squat 100.
But he is he like that pocket Hercules? Remember that little kid had abs? He was just totally jacked, and he was like 8 years old or something? I heard that kid doesn't lift weights anymore. Like this guy.
Smoking heaters.
Probably. Hanging out at the gas and sip. Yes, Todd.
Now, is that good parenting to allow your five-year-old to try to lift that type of weight? Unless you're sure they're going to amount to some multimillion-dollar pro athlete or something like that.
Well,
and they're still growing for another dozen years.
Yeah, I'm not into parenting.
Well, his father is a professional athlete, too.
Yeah. I don't want to get into parenting. I have a hard enough time parenting my own kids. I don't want to go, you shouldn't be allowing him to lift 50 pounds. I mean, his dad's a former athlete. It seemed to work out okay for him. Yes, McLovin, you seem puzzled.
You guys got to get on the DK bandwagon.
I enjoy him.
He's leading the league in touchdowns. He's 30 yards.
How can I avoid the bandwagon ran over me?
He's the best receiver in football.
The best receiver in football.
He's statistically the best receiver.
He's not the best receiver in football.
He definitely is.
Okay.
Who's better?
I think Stephon Diggs has been great this year. I think that DeAndre Hopkins is great. I'm sure there are a couple of the receivers, but if I said you could have Hopkins or Metcalf this season.
I personally would go Metcalf.
Okay.
Because of the deep threat. Hopkins is like a possession guy.
Okay. Yeah.
Hopkins is awesome too.
Yeah, I know.
Last night they should have thrown it to him every time and they didn't for some reason.
Yeah, I didn't know. I didn't understand that game plan there. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Ross Tucker, former NFL offensive lineman, of course, the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Westwood One NFL analyst. And then he sent me this bombshell this morning, this tweet. Are people nationally aware that the Steelers, Eagles, Penn State, etc., and their opponents will evidently be required to wear masks while they're playing in Pennsylvania from now on? Let's start there, Ross. You got my attention.
Yeah, how are you, Dan? Thank you for having me. I'm back in your favorite place, by the way, West Point, New York.
Nice.
Georgia Southern and Army tomorrow. Looking forward to it. Yeah, so as you can see from my shirt, my high school's in the state semifinal tomorrow. So I've been following this closely. And on Wednesday, Governor Tom Wolf had 4 new mandates to help slow the spread of the coronavirus, one of which was evidently you now have to wear masks inside if you have someone over to your house, but also any athletic competition during the athletic competition, evidently you have to have a mask on. And what's kind of funny about it, Dan, is later that day, this has all happened Wednesday. Later that day, I think the Steelers said, we have an exemption for that. So then yesterday, the news people asked the governor's office, do the Steelers have an exemption? And the governor's office said, no, they don't have an exemption. Nobody has an exemption. So right now, the understanding is everyone in the state of Pennsylvania during athletic competition will be required to wear a mask. However, I've seen the local PIAA say it's really up to the school districts and their solicitors to decide how they handle it. So it's very, very interesting. And what I don't like about it, Dan, is anytime you talk about something like this, it feels like it gets political, right? You know, on the one hand, I don't think wearing a mask or a gaiter is that big a deal. I've talked to some college kids at Miami, Ohio, or whatever. They've worn one in practice all year. On the other hand, we now have between Australia and Europe and the United States, thousands and thousands of games, and there's still no evidence of transmission during play. So it doesn't really seem like this mandate would actually be following the science or the data. So it's a bit of a conundrum.
Okay, the Steelers and Eagles, I think, are both on the road. So they would have a week to work this out if this is going to be implemented with the NFL. Does that sound correct?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Steelers thought it already was worked out. They play Thanksgiving against the Ravens Thanksgiving night. There are high school playoff games tonight, and I think Penn State, Pitt, and Temple might all have home games tomorrow. So I don't know. I mean, it's on TV. You know, I'm sure that some of these games they can say, well, we're not wearing it. They're not going to – it's hard to enforce. But when you're on TV, they kind of have pretty good evidence that you're not doing it.
Yeah. Well, then you have the situation with the Raiders. The Raiders have 11 players who have tested positive. They have this game against Kansas City. Why hasn't this game been moved? It felt like when Stephon Gilmore tested positive for the Patriots, they moved their Thursday night game. How are they going to be – like at what point is it too many players for the Raiders to be able to play this game against Kansas City?
Yeah, so my understanding, Dan, and I might be wrong on this, is that most of those guys are just close contacts of one person that tested positive. So I think a lot of them are going to come off the COVID list tomorrow and Sunday. So okay. I think most of those guys should be able to play Sunday night. They just haven't been able to practice all week. And the NFL has decided that that is okay. That's acceptable for guys to not practice but still play the games. Heck, it worked for Roethlisberger last week for the Steelers. And there's no more bye weeks, Dan. I mean, there's no more opportunity. I think at some point, there's no doubt in my mind, the NFL went from, hey, there's a couple guys that can't play. We should, you know, try to reschedule it to, you know what? This is just going to be part of it. This is part of the competitive situation this year. Don't be a high-risk contact. Don't do things that cause you to get COVID, and we're just going to roll with it.
If you were an offensive lineman on the Saints, would you rather have Jameis Winston or Taysom Hill for this weekend's game?
Ooh. You know, I haven't seen Taysom Hill play quarterback enough to really be able to answer that. I guess I'd probably rather have Jameis. I think that he'd probably be able to get rid of the ball quicker, but I don't know about that. I do know this, though, Dan. I think it's interesting. You know, the Saints gave Taysom Hill a one-year extension as a restricted free agent. That's $21 million between last year and this year. I kind of assumed or thought that that was because they thought he had a great chance to be the heir apparent to Drew Brees. But now this will be the second year in a row that Drew Brees gets hurt,
yeah,
and they're putting in another quarterback instead of him. I guess they value him that much as a gadget guy. And also, because Jameis is only under contract for 1 year, they wanted to make sure they had at least some option, one option under contract for 2021. I guess I understand that.
He's Ross Tucker, former NFL offensive lineman. Ross Tucker, football podcast and an analyst for Westwood One. Also on the call this Saturday at noon, Georgia Southern at West Point. All right, let me go to the Thursday night game. What we saw with Seattle's defense stood out more than anything else. Is this a one-off, or is this how Seattle is going to be trying to play the rest of the season?
You know what? They've actually been pretty decent on defense three out of the last four games. With the exception of that Buffalo Bills game, Seattle has played better on the defensive side of the ball. We saw Carlos Dunlap, who they got from the Bengals, was a huge factor in the game last night. And I do think it's funny, Greg Cosell from NFL Films and I were debating this on the Ross Tucker podcast this morning. I do think, Greg, when they run the ball, when they run the ball a little bit and keep the defense fresh on the sideline, that it does help them. You know, I think they realize that just trying to have Russell Wilson be the hero and throw four or five touchdown passes every week, it's really, really hard to do. So running the ball a little bit helps Russell, and it's not as many snaps for the defense, and that D-line was able to get after Kyler Murray a lot better as a result.
And Troy Aikman during the game said defenses aren't going to just sit back and let Kyler Murray kind of dictate, that maybe defenses are going to start to go all out, put a little more pressure on him. And Seattle did that. They disrupted his pocket a little bit more, and they sort of dictated if he was going to run, when he was going to run, and if he was going to throw. It's easier said than done, but can you see that as a blueprint moving forward with defenses with Kyler?
Absolutely. Look, if you just let him drop back and pass, A, he's a really good passer, but B, there will eventually be a seam, and he will find it, and he's the quickest quarterback, one of the quickest NFL players I have ever seen.
Yeah.
He's going to find it. I think the philosophy a little bit is go get him before he gets you. And really, both he and the Cardinals, boy, they had some critical errors last night. I mean, think about the end of the first half, right? He slides a yard short of the first down on second and four. Otherwise, they would have kept the ball. They probably would have gotten a field goal at the end of that. Then third down, he doesn't give it to Kenyon Drake. They have to punt, and the Seahawks get a field goal at the end of the first half. Then, late in the game, he has that critical intentional grounding. The next play is a holding penalty in the end zone for a safety by Sweezy. That was 5 points that really came down to what I would consider mental errors by Kyler Murray.
Why is the sports media so obsessed with Carson Wentz?
You know, I'm probably the wrong person to answer this because I live outside of Philadelphia and I do Eagles TV and Eagles radio. So, I mean, that's all I know. I didn't know it was national. I know that's the way it is in Philadelphia for sure. I think for whatever reason, he's become a really polarizing player. You know, 2017, he probably would have been the MVP of the league and they might have won the Super Bowl with him, but they didn't. So he doesn't get credit for that. And it feels like he's kind of gotten a little bit worse each year. And this year, certainly, he has struggled. So now, and then the Eagles drafted Jalen Hurts, which added intrigue to the situation. So there are people, you know, it's a really interesting thing, Dan. I know you know this, right? But it's hard to get people to come off their original take or their original opinion of someone. And so many people went in on the Carson Wentz top five quarterback, Carson Wentz MVP, that they're going to fight that. They're going to hold on to that as long as they can, even though, unfortunately for the Eagles, he clearly has not been that guy this year.
But how much blame do we put on him? And is Jalen Hurts an upgrade if you put him in there now?
So I think that Wentz deserves a lot of blame this year. And I'm a big fan of his personally and professionally. They've had a lot of guys out, but he's had so many turnovers this year, so many really ugly, surprising turnovers where he's trying to do too much. But the thing that, Dan, is probably the scariest for the Eagles and Eagles fans, you know, last Sunday against the Giants, Miles Sanders was back, Alshon Jeffrey was back, Lane Johnson was back. And by the way, Carson Wentz didn't turn it over. I mean, he didn't turn it over. So there was no sort of a crutch or excuse for why the Eagles lost. They just got beat. I mean, the Giants were just better. The Giants are just the better team in that game. They won by 10. So all of the sort of built-in excuses about injuries or turnovers, they all went out the window. So now Eagles fans are kind of like, wait a minute, now what? Now are we just not good?
I love the way the Giants play. You know, they may not be a great team, but they play hard. And it feels like every week they're getting better. I don't know if they steal this division, but nothing would surprise me in the NFC East. I just don't think the Eagles are a good team right now. I don't think they're well coached right now. The Cowboys are a mess right now. Washington's a mess. And here are the Giants without Saquon Barkley, and they might be the best team in the division the second half of the season.
I agree. They certainly were on Sunday. You know, they've lost so many close games. They've been – Joe Judge has them in every game. They easily could have 5 or 6 wins right now. When you think about all the Cowboys game and the Bucks game, I mean, all these close losses, Joe Judge did a nice job with that team. The defense is much improved. Daniel Jones 2 games in a row without turning it over. Right now, I think they are the best team in the NFC East. The only thing I would say, and I've been saying this all week, is – this is exactly when the Eagles win. I mean, 4 years in a row, 2017, 18, 19, just when all the Eagles fans are like, I'm done with them. I'm not watching anymore. The season's over. They somehow win when you least suspect it and figure out a way to win the division or go to the playoffs and maybe even make a run. So we'll see. Big game against Cleveland on Sunday.
Great to talk to you, Ross. Thank you. Enjoy West Point, Army against Georgia Southern coming up at noon Eastern on CBS Sports Network. Thank you, buddy.
My pleasure, always.
That's Ross Tucker, former NFL offensive lineman, and the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, where you can learn something. Westwood One NFL analyst.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I mentioned a couple of basketball things at the end of the hour. I wanted to get Frank Isola on, who covers the NBA. You can see him on Around the Horn, pardon the interruption. And, of course, he has his SiriusXM NBA radio show called The Starting Lineup, Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Frank, thanks for joining us on short notice. This Gordon Hayward situation, where he just turned down $34 million from Boston. What is the plan that Gordon Hayward has? Where's he headed?
Well, first of all, good to see you, Dan. You look great. You know, clearly he's not part of their plans, which doesn't mean that he still might not come back to them for just 1 year. But there's no way that Gordon Hayward is opting out of $34 million a year unless he believes he can get a good deal someplace else. So could that be the Knicks? Could it be the Atlanta Hawks? Is he looking at perhaps a 4-year deal worth between $80 and $100 million? It's hard to believe because if you look at the last 3 years, he's only played in 125 games. The first year was 1 game. The next year, I think it was about 70-plus games, but he was mostly a backup, and that was that first year back from injury. This year was 52, and he didn't play that well, and he wasn't really good in the playoffs, but it only takes one team, and a team like the Knicks, the Atlanta Hawks, they're looking to make big moves. So it looks like Gordon Hayward will likely be on the move. I think what the Lakers are hoping – I'm sorry, what the Celtics are hoping is that he will agree to a sign-and-trade so maybe they can get something back for him.
But see, why are the Knicks doing this? And then they're going to bring back Carmelo. It just felt like you got Obi Toppin, who's a wonderful kid. I don't like RJ Barrett's good. Like, just can they just be complacent, patient here for a little while and not go for the guy that's a big ticket item who's coming off injuries or at the end of his career?
Well, I would say this: I think that Tom Thibodeau wants to win now. When I mean win now, I think he wants to be a playoff team. And the only thing I would say about that, look at the move. Now, it's a different player, but if you look at the move that the Phoenix Suns made, they haven't made the playoffs for 10 straight years. And Chris Paul has been in the playoffs for 10 straight years. And a couple of years ago, everyone would have said, that's the last guy you want on your team because of that contract. Look what he did to Oklahoma City last year, a team that a lot of people thought wouldn't be a playoff team. So everyone's value on that team increased because Chris Paul was there, including Dennis Schroeder, who just got traded to the Lakers. So I think if you're the Knicks, there comes a point, Dan, where you just can't be young all the time. It's about being good. It's about getting better. I say it all the time. If you want to be young and athletic, just draft a track team from a college, you know, get a bunch of 20-year-olds and run up and down. That's not what it's about. Sacramento has not made the playoffs for 14 straight years. They're young.
Yeah.
And I think the Phoenix Suns are in the same boat where they figured we have to make a move. And that's why I think if you're the Knicks, why not get a couple of veteran players, try to make the playoffs? You need to change the perception of the organization, because the perception of the organization is you're dysfunctional and you're never good enough.
But if I look at the Celtics situation, like, are they, is there another move there for Danny Ainge and the Celtics? Are they going status quo?
I think they're, you know, if they end up losing Gordon Hayward for nothing, it's definitely a setback. Now, he wasn't the player that they thought they were getting. The injury obviously had a lot to do with that. And they're in a tough situation as well with Kemba Walker, who all of a sudden, all that wear and tear on the knee is catching up to them. And he struggled in the bubble as well. So this would be a major setback for the Celtics in a year where, you know, look at the moves that Daryl Morey is already making. Could they make a play for James Harden? You know, the Nets are going to be better. Toronto, that situation's in flux, but if they run it back with everybody, they'll still be a tough team. The Atlantic Division is very good, and it looks like the Knicks are getting better as well. So Boston will be, to me, if Boston doesn't have a player similar to Gordon Hayward, a talented scoring type of forward, they're going to take a step back. And this was a team that was a conference finalist last year or a couple of months ago.
If you ran the Rockets, what would you do with James Harden?
To me, it's frustrating. And this is why, you know, we talk all the time about player empowerment. And players love it. The union loves it. Fans seem to like it. People in the media love it. All right, so player empowerment works when it's LeBron. So he goes to Miami and he throws his weight around and he brings players there. They win a title. He does it in Cleveland. He does it in L.A. He wins a title. Kawhi was all about player empowerment. He went out to L.A. and he said, you need to get Paul George here, then I'll come. So they move heaven and earth, trade all these assets to get Paul George. And what happens? They don't play well. They don't even get out of the second round. And Doc Rivers loses his job. So player empowerment is great for a player because you're never held accountable. So James Harden did the same thing. He didn't want Chris Paul on the team anymore. They trade all these assets. So Oklahoma City will take that contract. And now James Harden wakes up one day, doesn't want to play for the Rockets anymore. To me, if I'm the Rockets, if I can get Ben Simmons, I'm getting 7 years younger. He's been an all-star before in the league. To me, that makes sense. I cannot trade him to the Brooklyn Nets. And I like Spencer Dinwiddie and Caris LeVert and Jared Allen, terrific role players. But you're going to be a lottery team in the Western Conference. And when you're a lottery team, your pick belongs to Oklahoma City. So Sam Presti is rooting for the Houston Rockets to trade James Harden to the Brooklyn Nets because Oklahoma City will end up with those picks.
Yeah, it is amazing, though, that he said, hey, I don't want to play with Chris Paul. I want Russell Westbrook. And then all of a sudden he wakes up and he goes, no, I don't want to do this anymore. And if I'm the Rockets, I'm not in any hurry to trade James Harden. I want two teams to be involved. And I wonder about this, Frank. I still think if you said I'm going to get James Harden, I'd rather have James Harden with Ben Simmons than I would Joel Embiid. Because I don't think Joel Embiid's going to go, hey, let me just stand around and watch him jack up 30 shots a game. He wants to be a star, thinks he's a star. Ben Simmons, to me, would be more of an accompaniment, a compliment to James Harden as a player than Joel Embiid would.
I happen to agree with you. It's funny, just a little while ago, I looked it up on Embiid. You know, he's been in the league 6 years. He's played in 209 regular season games. LeBron has played in 260 playoff games in his career. And that's the thing. Embiid is a terrific player, but the way the NBA is going, kind of going away from the big man, and to me, he's not available enough. And the one thing about Harden, people could beat him up all they want. You know, some of the playoff moments that he's had where he checked out in that one game against San Antonio, hasn't played well the last couple of years. They had Golden State on the ropes. He didn't play well. During the regular season, the guy plays. He's the throwback. He lives hard. He goes out all the time, but guess what? He shows up and he plays and he's productive. And Ben Simmons is 6'10", could handle the ball. Whenever people ask you to, you know, decide between the two of them, I'm with you. I always say Ben Simmons, just because for me, the skill, the athleticism, and to me, he's only going to get better. You just worry about Embiid with that foot injury that he's had.
He's Frank Isola, who is on Around the Horn, and pardon the interruption, and he has a show on SiriusXM NBA Radio, the starting lineup Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Lakers make any moves here in free agency?
Well, you know, Jerian Grant is a player that they'd love to have, an athletic wing player. I don't believe that they can get him, but I think they made a really good move getting Dennis Schroeder. Now, Rondo brought great leadership to that team last year, played very well, especially in the playoffs. But I think what's going to happen with the Lakers, there'll always be those players late in the season, whether or not they get bought out or guys that they'll sign for minimum deals. LeBron is still at the top of his game, and we'll see how they manage his games and his minutes during the season.
But do you think Rondo's gone?
I do think he's gone. I had heard that Atlanta's going to offer him 2 years, $15 million, but his preference, believe it or not, is to play for the Clippers. I don't know why that is. Does he have a relationship with Ty Lue? That could be part of it. So I think the Clippers are definitely in on him. So if Rondo were to leave, I think he would end up with the Clippers. But LeBron is still so good. And Anthony Davis is like the perfect second player, because I think Anthony Davis is fine with LeBron still being the guy. And there were times where you could tell LeBron was carrying Anthony Davis. You know, Davis gets hurt a lot. He leaves games. He ends up coming back in. But I think Anthony Davis, even the way we perceive him now, has changed because he played with LeBron and won a title. Think about the guys that LeBron's won a title with: Chris Bosh, Kevin Love, Kyrie Irving, now Anthony Davis. He's done a lot for the careers of those players.
What kind of team is Golden State going to be this year?
I mean, I think they'll struggle to make the playoffs just because the Western Conference is so good, and it stinks because we all love Klay Thompson. He's a great guy, terrific player, unbelievable shooter. The Kelly Oubre move is interesting. So if they're going to trade for him, and that $14 million is because of luxury tax, is basically $82 million. You mean to tell me in today's NBA, with all the scouting that we have, every team has 100 scouts and they have all these development coaches, you can't find a player somewhere in the G League that comes? I get it. You can't find someone that comes close to what Klay Thompson does. You can't find someone that comes close to doing what Kelly Oubre does, which essentially isn't going to cost you $82 million.
Wait, explain that.
All right. Well, he makes $14 million, and because now they'll be over the luxury tax, that really comes out to about, like I said, $66 million of luxury tax. You add the two of them, it's $82 million. Just to add Kelly Oubre to the team. That's how much he puts you over the luxury tax. That's what I don't understand. You can't, there's nobody that you can find a cheaper alternative. Are they panicking a little bit? Kelly Oubre is a good player, but for $82 million, I don't know about that for 1 year.
Frank, always great to see you. Thanks for joining us, and happy Thanksgiving. My best to all the PTI and Around the Horn folks, and thanks for joining us on short notice.
Thanks, Dan. Same to your guys.
That's Frank Isola and the starting lineup Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. on SiriusXM NBA Radio. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. Let's bring in Daniel Jeremiah. He's a former scout with the Ravens, Browns, Eagles. He's an NFL Network analyst. He was working the game last night that we'll get to. Let me start with what you thought of Taysom Hill when he came out of college.
Sure, Dan. I thought he was, first of all, I felt like I evaluated him 9 years in a row, because every year you'd go to BYU and look at him and be like, hey, they got this kid Taysom Hill. It'll be his last year. And he'd get hurt and he'd come back for another year and another year and another year. So, but the evaluation was, honestly, was he was a faster Scott Frost, which was... You remember Scott coming out, he made the transition to safety, and the thought was, this guy's a tremendous athlete. We just don't – I mean, he just runs around back there for the most part. So, you know, we can use him in a variety of roles, special teams. Maybe you can develop him into a safety. But I for one, did not view him as a you know, future NFL starting quarterback, and I don't know anybody that was scouting him that did at that time.
Why is Sean Payton all in on Taysom Hill?
I think he's had a certain playbook that he's been limited to with Drew, and I think he's been curious to see how he could expand it and the creativity he could bring to Sean to kind of invigorate him a little bit. So I think that's been something that's an itch he's wanted to scratch. And, you know, I was curious. I was anxious to see if they would give him this opportunity, because I was beginning to think that Taysom Hill was going to have a lifetime in the sidecar and never get to be in the motorcycle. Just he's always going to be the other quarterback along with your starter instead of being the starter. And now you're getting a chance to see. Let's see what he can do with an entire game or two here.
But he's 30. Can you teach somebody to play the position at 30?
He's a young 30, Dan. He's a young 30.
he's got a lot of mileage. 30. No, he's got a lot of mileage on. He's an old 30, I think.
No, I mean, well, I don't know. We're going to find out. We, there's nothing to compare this to. We don't really have anything in history to go back to compare it to. I just know, man, he's dynamic with the ball in his hands when he takes off and runs. My question is, doing that on a part-time basis, he's been able to stay healthy. Can he stay healthy doing that on a full-time basis?
Okay, if you could have Tebow or Taysom Hill.
Tebow, I think, ran high 4.6s, low 4.7s. Taysom Hill is a 4.4. I mean, like, he's a totally different level of athlete than Tim Tebow.
Why is Tebow not in the league?
He's a quarterback that can't throw, Dan. That's not a great combination. So that would be why.
Other than that.
How was the play, Mrs. Lincoln?
But okay, this felt like this was common knowledge, but people were still, Denver takes him first round. Josh McDaniels takes him first round.
Yeah, I mean, but you can talk yourself into Tebow as a passer in college. I mean, even though, you know, there was issues with his delivery, there was issues with the, you know, when you just watched him mechanically. But if you want to look at the stats and the numbers, you say, okay, well, he played in the SEC, you know, completion percentage, yards, wins, all that stuff all piled up. And you can say, hey, he made that skill set work in the best conference in college football. Maybe we can get him to make it work in the NFL. So I can see how they kind of talk themselves into that.
Yeah, it's still baffling because Tebow's, what, 32 now? But if you said to Tebow, hey, we're going to make you a tight end, like, Tebow would still be in the league, wouldn't he?
I don't know. I don't know if he was that type of an athlete. I feel like the Jets and the Patriots kind of wanted to get him worked into some of those areas, and it just didn't really happen. So, I don't know. I think that was kind of the easy thing to say for all those years. Like, if he had just played fullback or tight end, H-back, that he'd be still going. And I don't think that's necessarily the case.
What have you seen with Kyler Murray that's different than how you viewed him when he was coming out of college?
Well, I mean, I he was an acquired taste for me in college, and I just got to the point where I was like, I cannot deny how good this guy has been. You know, even, you know, you look at some of the size issues, limitations of the limited play time, whatever you want to look at negatively.
But did you have more questions about Kyler or Baker Mayfield?
I thought Kyler was a much better player than Baker Mayfield. Okay. So Kyler, I had a higher grade on coming out. So, but he's been, you know, I got to the point where by draft day, I was excited about what he could do. And he still exceeded that. Somebody was asking me the other day for, you know, the comparison for Kyler Murray. I'm like, there's not really an easy comparison. I guess the only thing I could say would be, you know, if you left Patrick Mahomes in the dryer for too long and strapped a jetpack to his back, that's kind of the way Kyler Murray plays. I mean, he's just a little miniature version of Patrick Mahomes with a little more juice.
But I wonder what we saw with Seattle last night, and you were doing the game. Seattle seemed to have a little bit more of an aggressive approach, and that is, we want to dictate what you're going to do before you dictate what we're going to do. Is that the blueprint, do you think?
Well, they did a good job with the zone read. So what they did is they just said, you're going to have to give the ball because we're going to account for the quarterback on every single zone read. So they kind of eliminated that portion of what he can do with his athleticism. But Dan, I thought when his shoulder, when he got crunched in the first half, I don't think he really looked to run. I don't think he looked to create. There were times where they were rushing three on some third downs. And usually when you rush three against a very athletic quarterback, you're begging him to go take off and run and get some of those free yards. And he never really even looked to do it. So I'm going to kind of put that game on a little bit on the side there in terms of an evaluation of Kyler, because I did not think he was right there with his shoulder.
And with Russell Wilson, was it just size? That's why he didn't go in the first or second round?
Yeah, I mean, I can remember where I was sitting at the Senior Bowl when the weigh-ins happened, and a lot of us had got to the point where we were like, okay, we were hoping he was going to be 6 feet tall, but we had convinced ourselves he's going to be 5'11 and change, and, you know, that's okay, we'll get through that. And then they said 5'10, 6. And then we all kind of looked at each other, we're like, oh, man, like, you get in the draft room selling 5'10, it sounds silly, but selling 5'10 is a lot more difficult than selling 5'11 at that time. It sounds stupid, but it's absolutely true, because I can remember somebody in the room, high up in the room where I was with the Eagles, just saying, who were the comparisons? Who were the 5'10 quarterbacks? And you're like, well, you get Doug Flutie. I mean, that's about it.
But if Russ was coming out now, given Kyler's success, where is Russell? First round?
Top five pick.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Because you would sit in there and you would read your reports on Russell Wilson, Dan, and you would be like, where are the negatives here? You know, he's got a live arm. He's a great athlete. He's smart. He's tough, competitive. He's been productive at a high level. You know, like there was, and even the size thing, there wasn't really, you never watched the tape of Wisconsin and left a game thinking, you know what, gosh, man, his size really hurt him in that one. It was really an issue. It wasn't, but it was just trying to get past the, you know, the history of not having one of those to compare him to. That's what it was. And that would have been gone.
And I wonder, I've said that Steph Curry will probably have a longer lasting impact on the NBA skill-wise than Michael Jordan, because we can't be Michael Jordan. But yeah, everybody feels like they could be Steph Curry. I wonder if Russell Wilson's impact on the NFL is going to be, he opened the door for every one of these quarterbacks who were 6 feet or under.
I don't think it's just the NFL. I think you can go to college and to high school. I think if you went into some of the, you know, big high schools in Texas or Florida and California, and you had a kid that went out there for tryouts and was 5'9", 5'10", and was infinitely better than the 6'3", 6'4" kid, those big high schools wouldn't even give the smaller kid a chance and say, no, you, that's not going to work. We're going to go with the bigger kid and we'll try and develop him to see what he can be. And we've seen that trickle all the way up. You know, Kyler Murray, Does Kyler Murray, you know, does he at that huge high school at Allen, Texas, is he even playing quarterback there at that time? If we don't have some of the success of some of these smaller guys, much less now we're looking around the NCAA. I think Alabama's got a freshman that they signed out of Modern Day High School, Bryce Young, who's 6 foot or below. He'll be starting in Alabama here in a year, and he'll run that program for 3 years.
He's Daniel Jeremiah, NFL Network analyst and former NFL scout. He does the Chargers games. By the way, how do you think the haircut with Justin Herbert is going to affect his performance here, Daniel?
I haven't had anything negative to say about Justin all year long. He's been phenomenal.
But,
and John Lott's a really good strength coach, but you know, you don't ask strength coaches to cut your hair. I mean, that's just, there's simple rules you live by, Dan, and that's got to be one of them. So that's the first poor decision Justin's really made.
Yeah, I agree. When do you start analyzing the college football players?
I'm working through offensive linemen right now. So that's kind of, I like to go positions at a time. So right now I'm really kind of getting cranked into it and then looking at the offensive line. So it's kind of apropos. Thanksgiving's coming up. It makes you really hungry when you watch a bunch of big guys.
But do you build up to the quarterback? What position is the final position?
Yeah, usually the quarterback I try and save towards the end, but there's sometimes you get into a lull where you're like, man, I got to get a pick me up here. And the quarterbacks are my favorite thing to do. So once we get to that point where I'm going to need a little juice, then I'll start really diving in.
Aside from the obvious, who are the quarterback candidates who might surprise us that they might be a day one or maybe a day two, but keep an eye on?
I mean, BYU, Zach Wilson is, everybody in the league loves that kid. So there is, he's got a lot of supporters.
But what is it that he has that, what does he do better than Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields?
I think it's just a creative playmaker. And I've looked at one game on him. So I've just looked at one game. He's got a live, loose arm. I think some of the things that this is the Patrick Mahomes effect of being able to play, you know, doing some things outside the structure of the offense. He does those extremely well while, you know, not being, you know, overboard with it, not being a little reckless. He's just got some of that playmaking ability that's got a lot of people fired up and excited.
Anybody else? I like what I'm seeing with Trask. He seems like a tough kid that he's going to take a hit, but he'll stay in there in the throw. But I always wonder about this, Daniel, and you know this better than me. I want to see what you do after an interception. I want to see what you do after you get sacked. Like in college, everybody's completing 80% of their passes, it feels like. I want to see when something bad happens to you. How important is that? Because in the pros, you're eventually going to get humbled.
Yeah, I mean, look at Joe Burrow. I mean, that was kind of his signature play from the year before, right? When he has the interception, he gets drilled and then comes back and plays lights out the rest of that game and then really never looked back the rest of his career. But the challenge, and Ozzie Newsome used to always say this in the combine interviews, was he wanted to get to the adversity that these kids have faced, not just on the field, but off the field and what they've done to overcome that. Because when you look at the bus, and we kind of all know who those guys are for the most part, dealing with adversity is the number one reason why these quarterbacks don't make it, because they haven't had much. They haven't had much through high school or college, you know, talking on the field. And then when they face that adversity, how are you going to handle it? So trying to see that and trying to diagnose that not only on the field, but off the field is a key part of whether or not these guys are going to make it.
Is Trevor Lawrence going to be rated higher than Joe Burrow?
I think there's probably a good chance of that because of just the added dimension of what he can do as a runner. You know, he's pretty special in that
regard. Joe Burrow is pretty good at that, too.
Joe Burrow is a good physical runner. Trevor Lawrence has got just more juice. Joe Burrow is going to fight his way for 15 yards, and Trevor Lawrence ran away from Ohio State. So that's the little difference there.
Boy, but to go to the Jets?
I'm not as down on the Jets, Dan. Let me give you my positivity for the Jets here. You'll probably just go to commercial while I'm talking.
No. You're Mr. Positivity. I'm all ears here. So the going to the Jets is going to be a great thing for Trevor Lawrence because?
Because I've studied them this week because they play the Chargers. So the left tackle, Mekhi Becton, who we loved in the draft, is going to be the best left tackle in the NFL within the next 2 years.
Okay.
Denzel Mims, who's been on the field for the last 3 or 4 weeks, looks outstanding. He's going to be a really good number two wide receiver. So there's a couple pieces there you can work with on offense. They've got, I think, the second most cap space of any team in the league. They're going to have the first overall pick. They're going to get Trevor. They're going to have Seattle's pick, which is going to be somewhere in the 20s. They're going to have the 33rd pick, the first pick of the second round. And I believe they're going to trade, if they have the first pick, they'll trade Sam Darnold. And I firmly believe they'll get a one. So you're going to have four of the top 33 picks to add in around him, a boatload of money in free agency to go out and get, you know, the Bud Dupree's or, you know, whoever else, Curtis Samuel, any guys you want there in free agency. So I think he can turn around pretty quick. They need to get the right coach. I mean, in my opinion, they got to go find the right coach. But I think that actually is a chance to turn around there with Jets.
But if you're Eric Bieniemy, and I said, take your pick.
I'm coaching Trevor Lawrence if I'm Eric Bieniemy.
Okay, all right. Because yeah. I don't want to go to Houston. As much as I like Deshaun Watson, I think that organization's a mess.
Well, the good news about Houston is that if you want an extra day off, you can take it. Unfortunately, it's the first day of the draft.
Wow. But what about Atlanta? Would you be interested in coaching the Falcons?
You know, I would be curious to see what their thought process is, because I think you could go two ways. You could say we still have, you know, with Julio and with Matt Ryan and some of these key pieces, Ridley's a really good player.
Would you keep Matt Ryan?
I think you have to with salary cap for another year.
Okay.
So, but are you going to try and maybe make a little run here with this group last time, or is it a gut job and you're coming in there trying to really, you know, go to the ground floor and build it back up? That's something I think that any coach that goes on the interview is going to need to figure out.
Yeah, it is pretty fascinating that Bieniemy can have, I think, you know, when the Texans said that they might be, or somebody reported they might just give it to Romeo Crennel for another year, I thought that said a whole lot, that they know they can't get Eric Bieniemy in Houston. So why not just have Romeo one more year? Can't be interviewing people due to COVID probably. And it's an odd year. So why not turn it over or keep it with Romeo Crennel?
Yeah, you know, and look, I do want to mention with Houston that you have Deshaun Watson. So even the fact you don't have draft picks, you've got some salary cap issues and roster issues. Man, there could be worse things than to get to coach him on a yearly basis. But I just think there's a little bit of a mess you got to kind of clean up there with some other areas.
Who had the flower arrangement behind you?
This is an NFL Network production back here. And the other thing is, Dan, do the bricks look real or fake to you?
Fake.
100%.
Yeah.
Wallpaper.
I know fake because all I have to do is look over the other side of the glass and I see fakes.
Oh, you've got bricks. You've got bricks behind you. Are those fakes?
They are cut in half. They're not full bricks. They're surface bricks.
Okay. I think the Oakland Coliseum has those as you walk out into the field. Those little miniature bricks.
You need helmets in there. You need books in there.
I know, but I feel like, you know, I thought about just kind of to have some fun, like putting my son's Little League trophies back here. You know, Kurt's got his MVPs and his NFL Man of the Year. What if I just put like a little League trophy right
there? Why don't you get
there?
Your jersey? Didn't you play college football?
Yeah, but I mean, like, is my Appalachian State jersey going to give me a lot more credibility right behind me?
Yes, it will. Yes, it will. Yes, given what your display is back there, yes, it will, Daniel. Yes. Hey, great to
talk. I get a lot of compliments on these flowers, I'll have you know. A lot of them.
No, my wife would like them. I mean, I think that she would really like those. It's very nice. Great to talk to you. Thanks for getting up for the appearance here, and great to talk to you. Thank you, Daniel.
Thanks, Dan. See you, bud.
That's Daniel Jeremiah, NFL Network analyst. And if you're watching on Peacock, you can see how bad that kind of that background area was with Daniel. Wait, did I just say that? Oh, I just did. NFL Network, they were on the game last night. It's called the Scouts Feed broadcast of last night's game. Cardinals Seahawks on Amazon Prime and Twitch. And you can follow Daniel Jeremiah at Move the Sticks. I always learn something with his own. I think he's one of the best analysts we have in the NFL.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
He's Nick Wright, first things first, and all-around good guy. And let me start with NBA news there for you, Nick. Explain Gordon Hayward's philosophy, game plan here of where's he going to end up?
Well, wherever he can get one more contract would be my guess. I don't blame him for this. Obviously, what's happened in Boston, he's been totally snake bit. It started as terribly as something can start. He's getting injured in the first half of your first game. He's kind of, because of his level of play since then, been lowered on the rotation as far as level of importance. And I know people look at Gordon Hayward is opting out of $30 million. Well, yeah, but he's probably opting into what will undoubtedly be less per year, but more total. I think he'll probably get 3 years, 60-some million dollars maybe from a team like the Hawks that has money to burn and is trying to add some veteran leadership. I reported last week, I think they're targeting Rondo to try to help kind of guide along Trae Young. So I think that's what happens there. And it's another, if you ask me, I mean, Celtic fans need to understand they can't replace the asset. They needed him to opt in and then trade him or do something. They don't have the money to replace the asset. And so Boston, it's really interesting, Dan. If Boston, you know, had the hijack with the Nets are going to tear it up, build it up, tear it down, and build it back up before the Celtics make an NBA Finals with that heist from them nearly a decade ago now.
Has this Celtics team underachieved?
Oh, I think so. I don't know if the team – let me rephrase. I think Danny Ainge is underachieved. I don't know if you saw the latest, you know, report. A former Boston Herald reporter – I apologize, I don't have the name in front of me – retweeted yesterday.
Steve Bulpit.
Thank you, Steve Bulpit. I assume he used to go on SportsCenter with you back in the day. He reported that, you know, they had interest in James Harden. But then they cooled on it because of, you know, tertiary reasons, which makes James Harden the 13th consecutive big name free agent or possible player that Danny Ainge thought about, but decided this 11-year-old in Southern California who he holds the draft rights to in 2028 is just too good to give up. And so you didn't go and get Kawhi, the team that did won the title. You didn't go and get Anthony Davis, the team that did won the title. And you're not even going to attempt to get James Harden, and instead – the Nets, the Sixers, the Bucks, all might be better than you, and that's just in the East next year.
Yeah, I just wonder what the game plan is for the Celtics, because I do think Danny Ainge, there's been moments of brilliance there. And you have this young team. I don't know where Kemba is. I mean, I think Kemba feels – he certainly looks spent. I love Tatum and Jaylen Brown, but I don't know – do you think they would really consider James Harden in Boston?
Well, I don't think they will, and it's because they overvalue their own guys. Listen, Jason Tatum is an excellent player, but Celtic fans have decided he's going to win multiple MVPs. He'll never win one. And so you don't have a guy that's going to be a top five guy in the league. You could have had Kawhi Leonard for Jaylen Brown, who is a poor man's version of Kawhi Leonard. And you're like, no, we can't do it. And you can say, oh, Anthony Davis wasn't going to re-sign. Okay, you could still try to go win the title. And you have made one big swing since you've had all these assets. And it was a swing and a miss. It was Kyrie. And he couldn't wait. He said, I'm going to stay there forever, and then couldn't wait to get out of there. So I just feel like, you know, Boston calls itself title town. The only team that's not holding up its end of the bargain is the Celtics. They've got one ring since the Berlin Wall fell, and that's because Kevin McHale gift-wrapped him Kevin Garnett. So I just don't know when they're actually going to go for it.
If you ran the Rockets, what would you do?
Try to convince them to buy me out so I can go to a better situation like Daryl did. I mean, talk about an all-time move. I mean, hey, listen, you know, I think I'm going to take some time off, but why don't you give me some money to leave? And oh, you're $10 million a year for a way better situation. Listen, I empathize with Tillman Fertitta a bit. During the pandemic, if there were four businesses you didn't want to be involved in, you'd probably say, all right, the hotel business, the luxury hotel business, that's going to be tough. Casinos, that would be tough. High-end restaurants be tough in the NBA. How about you own only those four things and all of those things? So he's in a rough spot. I get that, but I don't know what the hell they're doing. I don't understand. They bought a second-round pick for $4.5 million. That feels more like money laundering than team building to me. I don't know what that is, but I guess it's part of the trade they made for the first-round pick. So I think they're going to have to rip it down, but the problem is – the owner wanted them to get off the Chris Paul contract so bad. I believe with, you know, good reason to believe, he was forced to trade James Harden, forced to trade Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook, and you give away all those picks. So now you tear it down, but you don't have your own picks. So what I wouldn't do is trade James Harden for a package surrounding 26-year-old Caris LeVert. I'm trading James Harden, I'm getting Ben Simmons, I'm getting Michael Porter Jr. How about this is a fake trade, only I am speculating about. One for one, James Harden, Donovan Mitchell. Donovan's under contract long term. You'd have to get Harden over the fact that he's going to have to live in Salt Lake City. But hey, James Harden living in Salt Lake City, he might be a 40-point-a-game guy with no nightlife. Donovan and Gobert, they're never going to get over it. And they're right now best case fifth best team in the West. But you can't trade him for Caris LeVert and Spencer Dinwiddie, who are 26 and 27 years old in draft picks that are going to be bad picks. You can't do that.
He's Nick Wright from Fox Sports 1, First Things First. You reported this, I think. I want to give you credit for being, you know, the journalist that you are, Woodward and Bernstein, when it comes to James Harden's jersey was retired by a strip
club.
Thank
you. Thank you, Dan. Can I tell you something?
This is your legacy.
You know me. I'm a radio guy at heart.
Yeah.
And 7 years ago, when I was in Houston, right after they acquired James Harden, I went and did some investigative journalism at Dreams, made famous by many a Drake song. And James Harden's only been there 6 months. And what they have at Dreams, it's a gorgeous establishment. Again, I was a younger man at the time. They have banners of their most famous performers. Diamond and stuff. And there's
Porsche,
one.
Cinnamon.
Yeah, absolutely, 1,000%. There is one that is not of one of their performers. It's James Harden's jersey. And I couldn't believe it. Now, pictures are not recommended at those places, but I managed to snap a small one and talked about it on my radio show. But again, I'm doing local radio. I'm Dan Patrick, doesn't even know my name at this point in time. Nobody cares. 3 years later, I think Steven Jackson or Matt Barnes, one of them, said it on Cowherd Show, and they get all the credit. I'm like, I broke this story years ago. So I appreciate you remembering or knowing that and giving me credit for that.
You sent out a tweet on Taysom Hill. You're not all in on Taysom Hill starting for the Saints, I gather.
I can't believe it. In fact, I don't believe it. Sure, is he starting? Sure. Is he going to throw the majority of the passes? That's impossible for me to believe. People think I don't like Taysom Hill. People actually, you know, this isn't a safe space. People think I don't like white quarterbacks. That's not really true, but I understand why people think it is. I have no problem with Taysom Hill. I have a problem with the way Taysom Hill is discussed. There are 32 teams in the league that would love to have Taysom Hill. He can do a little bit of everything. He is definitely worth a roster spot. But he's 30 years old. He's thrown 20 more career passes than me. And he's at $16 million next year. He's not a starting quarterback. Now, I don't know that Jameis is either, but I think Jameis, there's obviously more upside. Jameis is younger. Jameis, we know, has all of the ability except for not turning the ball over. And we found out he got his eyes fixed this summer. Now, I don't know if that means he was colorblind, but maybe he just couldn't see the jerseys. Maybe LASIK surgery, Jameis Winston's going to be a revelation. I just know Taysom Hill's not starting quarterback in this league. I know that. When Cam got COVID, were the Patriots like, hey, Jacoby Myers, he could start? No. Just because he played in high school doesn't mean he gets to start for the team.
You should make a bet, though, if Taysom Hill proves you wrong.
Yeah. Like, what's the bet?
Well, you got, you know, everybody on your show. I mean, I'm surprised you didn't. Nobody made a bet with you on Taysom Hill.
Well, I had. Here's the thing.
How about you wear a jersey? If he has two touchdown passes, then you have Taysom Hill week.
Where all Taysom Hill week?
Yeah, that all you do is say something nice. You wear a jersey. It might be a BYU. You become Mormon.
You know, I just thought about this. I need to right now say something nice about Steve Young. By the way, one of the most underrated quarterbacks in the history of the league. Because I trashed Danny Ainge and Taysom Hill on this show. Mm. So there's going to be and Salt Lake City. I didn't even think about it.
Wow.
I know the whole Mormon community is going to be against me. You guys are wonderful people. Evidently, you don't produce great quarterbacks in New Orleans or great GMs in Boston. But aside from that, I got no beef with the good folks.
You know what? For the betterment of your career, I'm going to cut you short now and just say, send you into the weekend.
Thank you, Dan.
And I'm rooting for Taysom Hill now. I wasn't. I don't root for anybody, but now I am. I want him to light it up against the Falcons.
Yeah, to make me look like an idiot. That's fair. Yeah. Can I tell you one quick thing? I try to end these things like this.
Okay.
At dinner during quarantine, my daughters get to what show we watch. We're going to watch a show. My older daughter likes Blackish. My younger daughter, the 7-year-old, oddly enough, has fallen in love with Cosby Show. It causes big conflict. So my wife and I said, you know what? If we're going to watch something, we're going to start watching family movies. And 3 days ago, we stumbled upon the Netflix Adam Sandler catalog. And I said to my daughter, who's right now remote learning, I'm going on his show because I pointed you down there. No, they don't believe me. They're like, what do you mean his show? I'm like, he's a sports guy. No, he's not a sports guy. He's an actor. So you have convinced a young generation of America with your acting chops that that's what you do full time. So how about that?
Would you like an 8x10 glossy that I could make it out to your daughters, you know, to the kids maybe?
Oh, yeah. That would be great. Okay. That would be great. Just make sure you sign it. The guy from the Adam Sandler movie.
Okay.
Because they don't know your name.
Okay. Maybe Fritzy can get your daughter's names, and I'll be happy to sign a photo. Does your wife want one?
That's going to be a soft no, but I'll circle back.
Okay. Thank you, Nick.
See ya.
Have a good weekend. That's Nick Wright. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.